What does functional feed ingredient mean?
Right. No, that's a great question. And you kind of hear these functional feed ingredients, feed additives. It depends who you talk to. Some people will call them foo-foo dust, right? I've heard that term in the industry, especially with live production managers and people like that. But really thinking about these additives, right? Obviously, they're going to serve some type of function in the body, whether that's in growth promotion, whether that's in immune stimulation, what have you, right? Gut microbiota stimulation, manipulation, things like that. But really, these ingredients maybe may not play a nutrient aspect in the diet, but maybe they could provide some other type of function to help promote, you know, whether that's a health promotion or a growth promotion, maybe meat yield or food safety promotion.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this interview interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dalton Dennehy, and he is a PhD candidate in the Department of Poultry Science at Mississippi State University under the supervision of Dr. Kelly Walmsley. His PhD research is focused on the efficacy of functional feed additives on performance and processing metrics in unchallenged broilers and in broilers challenged with coccidiosis. Welcome to the program, Dalton.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Corver. Thank you for that introduction. I look forward to our discussion today.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So let's talk a little bit about your background. How did you become interested in working with poultry?
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty cool question when you ask people that, because, you know, everyone's background is pretty unique. And I mean, typically when you ask most people, you know, most people don't really seek poultry, but they kind of stumble upon it. And in my case, that's exactly what happened. So when I was an undergrad, I actually did my undergraduate at Texas A&M University. And while I was an undergrad there, I started working for a gentleman called Dr. Jason Lee. And so Jason now works at CJ. You know, he had a pretty well-respected lab, and he had a lot of graduate students there. We did a lot of research. And so when I started working for him, you know, I was just a typical undergraduate laborer helping catch chickens, weigh chickens, make feed. But really working for him exposed me to this whole world I had no idea about, and that's poultry nutrition. And so when I started working for him, I got the opportunity to, you know, conduct some studies with him, looking at direct-fed microbials, probiotics, bacillus-based, enzyme stuff, mineral stuff, and really interact with his graduate students. You know, he had several at the time, many of which are pretty well established in our industry now. So I was really mentored by some of these graduate students. And just talking with them, you know, I realized the opportunity that was there with poultry nutrition and the career opportunities that were there. So progressing through my undergraduate program, I guess when Jason left Texas A&M, I was kind of inherited by Dr. Tri Duong in his lab. And so I really enjoyed working for Tri because it opened up my world now to a different side of nutrition that I really didn't, you know, work much with. And that was really the microbiology portion. So I was really thankful for Tri, and I got to get in a lab and learn basic lab techniques, plating, sterile dilutions, things like that. And so really working for these two professors, you know, led me, I guess, to graduate school. And so when I was deciding on graduate school, I was like, I really wanted to stay at A&M. You know, Aggies, you know, they say you drink the Kool-Aid there, whatever. But, you know, in my undergraduate, you know, being able to do research, things like that, I was able to meet Dr. Walmsley. And so this was at PSA, IPPE, things like that, just talking with research. And she had known that I was interested, potentially interested in graduate school. So just some discussion with her, she's like, come to Starkville, like, just come see, come look at our facilities, things like that. So I came out, Starkville, toured, I fell in love with it. You know, I say I went from one maroon SEC school to the other. But I love Mississippi State and I came here and I decided to pursue my master's and then now my PhD with Dr. Walmsley.
Did you have a poultry background before you went to Texas A&M?
No. So it's kind of funny too. So I originally went to A&M in 2013 when I graduated high school and I was an animal science major there. You know, most people enter animal science, they want to go to vet school or what have you. Well, my journey is a little bit different, a little bumpier. I actually failed out of A&M my first year. So I was kicked out of school. I worked 3 years as an electrician. I was like, you know what? I'll just learn a trade, start doing that. After about 2-3 years of working as an electrician, I realized I wanted to go back to school. I didn't want to make that a living. I wanted to get my education. So that's kind of how I got back into A&M, into my, you know, academic career. But yeah, poultry background, you know, I'm from South Texas originally, San Antonio area. There's not a lot of broiler production, I guess, in that part of the state. You know, most of the broiler production in Texas is kind of the eastern part of the state. So I really had no background in poultry specifically and really in agriculture. Kind of just stumbled upon it. I was involved in FFA, 4-H, things like that, but didn't grow up on a farm or a ranch or anything like that.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to dig deeper into the poultry health challenges you face. By gathering scientific evidence, they identify the most effective combinations of natural ingredients that improve animal health. Visit naturalbiologics.com/poultry to see the newest research in both turkeys and chickens.
Cool. Yeah, I think a lot of students have difficulty making that transition from high school to university. And I know that my first 2 years of university were not academically stellar either. So it's nice, maybe an encouragement to listeners that are dealing with some of those challenges to understand that, you know, it is possible to recover from maybe a bad start. So
certainly.
So let's talk a little bit about your research. You mentioned functional feed ingredients is an important part of what you're doing. So first of all, what does functional feed ingredient mean?
Right. No, that's a great question. And you kind of hear these functional feed ingredients, feed additives. It depends who you talk to. Some people will call them foo-foo dust, right? I've heard that term in the industry, especially with live production managers and people like that. But really thinking about these additives, right? Obviously, they're going to serve some type of function in the body, whether that's in growth promotion, whether that's in immune stimulation, what have you, right? Gut microbiota stimulation, manipulation, things like that. But really, these ingredients may not play a nutrient aspect in the diet, but maybe they could provide some other type of function to help promote, you know, whether that's a health promotion or a growth promotion, maybe meat yield or food safety promotion, I think. These additives is kind of how I would classify them in that category.
So in the context of your research, why is it important to look at the feed additives that you're investigating?
Right. So I think in my training, you know, beginning from my undergraduate degree, working with Jason and then Tree and now with Dr. Walmsley, my research has been very applied in nature. So I understand that basic science. But how do we apply that research and really leading into starting with my master's degree and into this, you know, more functional feed additive stuff? For example, some of my master's research, we looked at determining amino acid requirements for a novel broiler strain. And so what we did was we worked directly with a primary breeding company to update some of the amino acid and energy requirements of this novel strain so that they could then provide that data to their global customers. To, you know, kind of give them a basic starting point. And I guess segueing that into my PhD research with these functional feed additives, you know, there's so much science and stuff that we still need to understand about these feed additives, you know, how they work in the body, what's really going on metabolically that are causing these feed additives to kind of have that impact on whether that be health or growth. So I guess in the case of my research, you know, really taking these feed additives and putting them in practical diets, number one, and practical settings, obviously a research setting, you know, we can only mimic a standard, you know, chicken house so well, but we really try to do that. And then I'm looking at some of the challenges that the industry faces, starting with, you know, really coccidiosis and enteric disease challenges.
So is that the primary focus of your research, looking at those gut health, enteric disease applications?
Certainly, yeah. I've done some trials where we have used a coccidiosis challenge model that we've kind of used, I guess, within our research group, which we can expand on later. But really thinking about, you know, I think from my perspective, when you talk to, you know, integrated company nutritionists and stuff, we realize that they make money at the processing plant, right? That's when they're starting to make money on yield. And so when you read the literature and you see these types of functional feed additives and how they improved, you know, immunomodulatory, you know, I guess improving things like IgGA levels, IgG levels, immunostimulation stuff, how does that translate into things that are more tangible for the industry? For example, feed conversion or body weight or meat yield. You know, it's easy to sell someone on points of conversion or yield, right? And so how can we modulate that immune system to see, to realize that, I guess, in a conversion aspect or in a yield aspect, or maybe in a food safety aspect, right? So I think taking that technical knowledge and seeing how we can apply that in a more, I guess, impactful, I don't know if that's the right term, but something that the layman can understand, that you can tell a processing plant supervisor, you know, I'm seeing this in yield, or I can go tell a live production manager, look at this, look how many points I'm seeing on my conversion. You know, tying that technical side with that more applied side, I think, is important.
So do you have a particular experimental approach that you use, or does it vary depending on the product you're testing?
Definitely. It's gonna vary depending on the product we test. So we kind of do have some common procedures when we look, I guess, in my research in the case. So here at Mississippi State, we're pretty fortunate, right? We have two commercial houses where we are contract growers for a local integrator. So we're able to source, you know, used commercial litter from those houses. We're able to bring that into our research facilities, and we can, you know, use that litter as a kind of a basis, you know, for most of our studies. So we're giving these birds at placement, you know, kind of more of a practical, I guess, bedding material, right? This litter has had commercial flocks reared on it. That microbial load is going to be there. That coccidiosis load is going to be there. What have you, right? And so that's a really unique approach that we have here. In our challenge model, we typically utilize a live coccidiosis vaccine, where we'll give at a greater dose than what is, you know, manufacturer's recommendation to kind of, you know, get that coccidiosis cycling. So it's not a wild type strain or anything like that. It is from a vaccine. But we do that to kind of, you know, initiate some type of subclinical coccidiosis challenge. To really, you know, get that bird and see that response. In terms of other, as far as, you know, applied stuff, it's really, you know, what we look at when we measure stuff. And that's sort of kind of going back on what I mentioned. You know, you can do the look at the immune response and think, and you can measure that, right, and quantify that. But looking at certain metrics, right, what metrics can we easily measure that we can then share with growers, live production managers, nutritionists, veterinarians, where they all can be able to understand and be on the same page, where they can all collectively make a decision, you know, on running certain nutritional programs, vaccination programs, et cetera.
You mentioned doing your work in both challenged and unchallenged broilers. So why is that an important part of your approach?
Right. No, that's definitely a good question, and definitely a good approach, or I guess different approach in how we look at that. You know, certainly in the industry, you know, you're going to have that bacterial load, right? We've all seen the inside of a broiler house, such as keep it easy with broilers. It's not really a sterile environment, right? There's so many factors and onslaughts that come from this environment. Whether we try to control that the best we can or not, right? Every grower is different too. Litter management could be different. 100 things can be different, right? So looking at these products, you know, within a challenge model and without a challenge model, I think it's critical to really understand, you know, how these products work in the bird, right? When we put these birds in a challenge situation, right, metabolically, this bird's gonna be different, right? And so how they utilize nutrients, how they utilize that diet, and how they grow, how they perform, it's gonna be completely different. Additionally, you know, in the field, not all the time. Sometimes you might have a flock that performs great and you can go in there and you don't really have much of a coccidiosis challenge, right? It could be a pretty good setting, right? And then you go to a farm next door, different growers, different farms, you know, different environment, And you may see, you know, extreme bacterial challenge or extreme parasite challenge, you know, in coccidiosis. So I think really looking at these products in both of those settings is critical to really, really understand, you know, their efficacy, how they work, you know, how they can work in the bird.
Yeah, and it's hard to prove efficacy if you don't also know that it's going to work when those challenges are faced in the field.
No, that's definitely a good point.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show, presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set the notifications to on from our channel on YouTube so you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. And as always, please feel free to leave us a comment at any time. Your feedback is always valuable to us. So, Dalton, can you talk a little bit about the additives that you've studied, or if not specific products, maybe product categories?
Sure. Yeah, I can talk about, a few product categories. So I guess the title of my dissertation is looking at the efficacy of functional feed additives. And so some of the feed additives that we've really looked at, or I have, are Bacillus species probiotics. I've looked at some yeast derivatives. So thinking about yeast cell wall extracts, some mannan oligosaccharides, beta-glucans. And then I've also looked at some phytogenic feed compounds and that natural alkaloid, called sanguinarine. And then also looking at saponins sourced from a yucca plant, Shigedera, specifically, I guess.
So if one of the challenges in implementing the use of these products is maybe skepticism in managers and purchasing people with purchasing power, what do you think is important for these additives to become a normal part or a common part of the approach to maintaining gut health?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a challenge in the industry. And certainly, you know, there's a market there for these products, right? If there wasn't, there wouldn't be hundreds of companies selling products like this, right? And so when we talk about these functional feed additives, looking at probiotics, there's so many different types out there, right? Whether that's a variation of strain, optimal dose, the source of that product can really impact, you know, how it works. So I think that's really a challenge and why there's so much variation in the data. Like you mentioned, people are skeptical sometimes with these products. But I think in the industry too, really, I guess from a US perspective and from my point of view, is cost, right? And so when we think about feeding birds, especially in the U.S., something that has been really driven down, I guess, in our program is least cost formulation, right? You hear that from nutritionists, you hear that in your nutrition class. And I think it's really our perspective on formulating diets, right? If you have that least cost approach, which I mean, I understand there is a reason for that, you know, some of these products, one, that they're not going to price in your formulation because they're typically, you know, added on top or something like that. But like I said, like I mentioned earlier, we got to realize that as a formulating nutritionist, integrated nutritionist, I got to get that ROI back in my processing plant. And if I don't, you know, it's hard for me to justify including a product like that in my diet. You know, I was given the opportunity to attend PhD student seminar a few weeks ago. And there they had a guest speaker named Dr. Kyle Coble. I think he's over JBS Live Pork. And he mentioned something that really resonated with me as kind of a young nutritionist was he said he approaches his programs from a best cost formulation standpoint. And I thought that was a very, very unique term and why he said that, because he's like, you know, this may not be the least cost formulated diet, but it's the best cost, because when I look and I see my gains in the field and that's translated to my plant, right? And I see my economics behind that, sometimes a more expensive diet can be justified. And I think that's a really important approach, especially with products like this. You know, you start talking with some of these probiotics, especially some of the yeast products, phytogenics and stuff. When you start looking at your price per treated ton, you know, it can quickly add up. And so I think that's a really important concept, especially when you try to apply this in the industry and you try to sell these products and you try to utilize these products in your formulas.
Yeah, so it's more of a profit optimization problem rather than a minimizing cost problem.
That's correct. That's correct. And from my approach too, you know, with some of these products, you know, veterinarians can recommend some of these products. Live production managers can, but I think it's important that the veterinarian, the nutritionist, live production manager, the growers, right? They're all on the same page. Because even with some of these products, you know, they became very popular, I guess, in monogastric nutrition when we started removing antibiotics. And so when we start using some of these products, we really have to reevaluate the way we manage the whole production process. Yeah, how we treat litter. What do we do with our downtime between flocks? That's really going to change how these products work and why. You know, antibiotics were kind of a security blanket for us for many years, you know, and, you know, with the pushback and understandably so, these products, you know, there's definitely a place for these products within the market.
Yeah. And I think it starts to bring in non-economic factors like social license and animal welfare and things like that. So it becomes a much more complicated than simply looking at a least cost. So it's good to hear you talk about that.
Definitely.
So looking ahead, where do you think functional feed additives will be? Is it, are we going to figure it out or is there a continual development coming?
Yeah, so that's, you know, really forecasting and predicting future trends is difficult, but obviously there's people that do that every day. And so I guess from my perspective as a graduate student is these products are here to stay. You know, there's so many different production systems. So consumers want different things, right? We see that, we know that, and we can provide that to them. You know, some people want all natural diets, all veg, all, you know, more conventional, whatever it may be. These products do have a place in the industry. It's really important to see how these products emerge or compete with, I guess, pushback from certain, I guess, big consumer, I guess, retail people, you know, with certain companies going back to using no antibiotics important to human medicine. You know, it'd be really interesting to see how that push really shapes, I guess, the market of these types of products and how, I guess, you know, the allied industries and integrated nutritionists kind of maneuver about that and find a place for these products, you know, within the production system. I certainly think there will always be a place for these products because they're so diverse and just their function too. You know, you can see it work against bacterial, you know, challenges. You can see it work against parasitic challenges like coccidiosis, anything like that. So I think there certainly is a place for these products in the future. And from, if I were to speculate, I think that they will continue to increase, especially in monogastric nutrition.
How about you personally? What have you got coming up in the near future?
Yeah, so I plan to graduate in May 2025. I actually have my defense scheduled for the end of February. So currently, I'm just finishing my PhD writing and preparing for my defense and have began the job search recently. On top of all that, I actually get married in March 2025. So finishing up planning a wedding, we pretty much got all that ironed out. So just, you know, at this point, just got to show up for the wedding. So, but looking forward to that and finishing up my program and just continuing on the job search and, you know, exploring every avenue, every opportunity.
Wow, that's great. Congratulations. So are you looking for a job in a particular field or a postdoc, or are you looking to go to industry or academia?
Right. That's a really good question. And just goes back to my training. You know, the professors I worked for have been very practical and applied in nature. So I'm really looking for something, you know, in the industry, whether that's in production or the allied side. I really think just in my experience and my skill set, really being able to apply that in a very practical way, I guess. I'm really just been, you know, looking around right now and just seeing what's out there and what's available and really utilizing my network, I think is something that has really helped me out a lot.
Great. So maybe if any of our listeners are looking for a recent PhD graduate, Dalton might be someone you'd be interested in contacting.
Yeah, that would be great. Great.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Probiotech International is driven by innovation, inspired by nature, and passionate about contributing to a more sustainable, safe, and healthy food system. We work closely with our customers to deliver solutions to current and future challenges facing the animal production sector while using natural active ingredients such as chemotypes and polyphenols derived from plant extracts and spices. Our products follow a rigorous scientific validation process. They are then proven to work through thorough field research, certified for quality, and then brought to market as a complete and effective solution. In a world filled with rapid change, let Probiotech International deliver your opportunities for solutions and savings to your program. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
So let's change gears a little bit to finish up here. What is your favorite poultry or agriculture related book or resource?
Yeah, I actually have it sitting right here in front of me, I guess, for viewers that can watch. But it's actually this book by Rick Klein.
Yeah.
It was actually a book that was gifted to me. He has some that over broiler nutrition specifically as well. But I really enjoy this book. It's something that I kind of lean to at times too. But usually I use that book when undergraduates come up to me that are really interested in nutrition, that maybe have began working with us in our lab and just want to learn more about chicken nutrition and research. I really give them this book and guide them. I think it's a very great resource, and how Rick really approaches all of chicken nutrition. But the point I enjoy most about that book is he has a section on the scientific process and on research. And I think that's very, very important, especially with undergraduate students, sparking their interest in research. Why do we do research, and what is the purpose of that? I think this book really highlights that. So I think it's a great resource.
Yeah, I agree. I really like that book as well. And it's very practical and very lots of good explanations of why things are done. And like you said, that section on experimental understanding experiments and research, I think is a good resource for people trying to figure out how do we look at feed additives, functional feed ingredients, and consider whether to use them in our own operations. So
right.
What about outside of poultry science or agriculture? What's your favorite book or resource?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question. It's kind of funny. I'm not a huge podcast fan. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. So that's really one thing. I think the reason why I'm not is because I like when I listen to something, I have to be hyper focused. Like I'm super fixated on it. So it's hard for me to multitask. So if I put a podcast in and try to write, I won't be able to write. And obviously at this point I need to write. So I guess I'm more of a reader. I've been reading a lot about chickens lately. But outside of that, you know, Dr. Walmsley, I think she's really, really big on personal development and professional development. And there's several books that she shares with us by this author named Adam Grant. He also has podcasts too, but he has a lot of books about, you know, personal professional development that we've read, you know, in our seminar class or just within our lab group that have been, you know, great resources as far as motivational stuff, self-reflection. I really enjoy things like that. Other books, I really enjoy reading books by coaches. Whether that be, you know, football coaches, basketball coaches. I think when learning how they can assemble a team from people with different walks of life, you know, how they can make, you know, such a diverse group of people become a cohesive unit. I think that's always interesting to read and their perspective on that and how we can apply that, you know, in the workplace or within our family life or within our friend group, et cetera, anything like that. So I enjoy reading books like that.
In your opinion, what sets apart successful graduate students?
Well, I can speak on my experience, I guess, and starting with Jason, eventually with Tree, and eventually with Kelly or Dr. Walmsley. You know, I've been very blessed, and I've been surrounded by great, great graduate students and had great mentors. You know, if you look at the students that they've put out into the industry and where they've ended up, it's really a great group and phenomenal group, and it really started with them. So what they pushed to us, even their undergrads, was network, 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 right? Shake hands. And I think that's, you know, so cliche. That's what people say, you know, everyone always says, you hear it all the time. it's a chicken business, but it's really a people business. But that's so true. 100% that's true. You know, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room, the best looking, whatever it is. But if you have a network behind you and people that believe in you and support you, it's amazing the doors that will open for you and the opportunities that will be presented for you. So I've always networked and utilized my network. And just be you, right? Don't be fake about it, but just be genuine, be honest, and communicate that with others. And you'll be surprised, you know, the mutual connections you can build with people. I think that's something that's really helped me. And I would encourage, you know, other people to do. And what I've seen in successful graduate students and eventually successful professionals, right, within the industry.
Well, Dalton, thanks so much for taking the time to spend with us today. It's been great getting to know you a little bit, and I wish you all the best in your future endeavors, your defense, and especially your marriage and also your job search. So thanks again.
All right. Thank you for your time, Dr. Korver. I really appreciate our discussion today, and I really enjoyed it.
That concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcasts and stay updated on future episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. Visit our website at wisenetics.com, and you can learn more about all our podcast segments for poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and pet food. I'm Doug Korver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.